If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program and welcome to Hump Day, of course. Hump Day Wednesday, Wednesday afternoon already here in Sydney, Wednesday morning very early in London, in the UK, and still Tuesday evening right across the United States of America. Thank you so much for joining us as we get into the Australian leg of our 24/7 network at TNT Radio. Now, whether you're simply listening on our website or even our app, as most people prefer to do, or you're watching through the same sources or any one of the hundreds of video streaming platforms on the internet, and there are hundreds, and we are there, just put in TNT Radio and it'll magically pop up. Thank you very much for being part of what has been an incredible 2024 already as we go visual, the TNT Radio product going visual right across the globe, of course. First up, an Australian city now out of control, they say. Alice Springs, in the centre of the continent, has had more riots yesterday, and riots that many of the locals say they have not seen the like of before. I'll tell you what we've found about what's occurred in the last 24 hours in Alice Springs, what the brilliant Alice Springs senator Jacinta Namphigipa-Price had to say about what needs to be done now. And we'll also explain to you my view on why we've reached this point. This is a point where the Northern Territory government doesn't know how to control violence in a city. It simply is Indigenous-based violence out of control. You've seen the pictures. Let's call it for what it is, because you can't solve anything if you're going to tippy-toe around the facts. These are the facts. We've got to tell the truth. That's the most important thing. And when you've got a weak, progressive territory government like the Northern Territory has, what do you expect? When you decide that you can't put police on the beat and you've got to hire security guards, what do you expect? When you've got a two-tiered system like that, because you couldn't be bothered funneling your precious money into policing, what do you expect? We'll get to that very shortly on the program. Communications expert Prue McSween, who calls a spade a giant big shovel, she is going to have her say on this seemingly intractable problem in Central Australia. We'll also talk about today's debate in Canberra over what to do with criminal detainees and new legislation designed to deport the worst of them. It seems as if the Greens and, would you believe, the Coalition have teamed up on this issue, and they've come up with a solution of their own, and the Labor Party, the government, doesn't know quite what to do from here, which is very typical of policy in the hands of Anthony Albanese. And we'll talk about who do we trust in society. No, we don't trust the government. That kind of went out the door about 25, 30 years ago. We don't trust institutions now that we've got through the pandemic. Who do we trust? Do we trust anyone? And what happens when a society doesn't trust anyone that's in charge? I don't think it's good news, but it's true. It's what's happened right around the world. So plenty more with Prue McSween. My special guest today will come to us from that magnificent place in New Zealand, the Bay of Plenty. Kirsten Murfitt is a New Zealand lawyer. She's a writer, and she's a very strong advocate for justice. She has a healthcare story to tell us today that you simply will not believe. Say, for instance, I desperately need a heart transplant, as a woman by the name of Irene in New Zealand did. What if I was told, as I walked into the hospital, having difficulty breathing, knowing that I needed a heart transplant very quickly, and I was told, sorry, we can't get anywhere near you. We can't give you the heart because you're not vaccinated against COVID. True story. Have they gone nuts whereby all of a sudden the need to be vaccinated for this virus is more important than replacing someone's ticker? The organ that keeps you alive? That's how just, that's the kind of lunacy that's going through hospitals around the world, not just in New Zealand. And we'll talk to Kirsten Murfitt about that case. It's unbelievable. And it's Cyber Wednesday, which means we talk with Alex Zaharoff-Reut about cyber and tech news from right around the world. But we've got to find him today, not in Australia. We're finding him in Bangkok. And he'll explain why he's in Thailand for us and what the big news is over there in terms of technology. So a very, very hefty program. And my very special guest today, I almost forgot because I didn't write it down because it was that obvious that I had to tell you about it. We are catching up with Julian Assange's father on the program this hour. John Shipton has agreed to come onto the program to talk about and respond to what occurred in the UK High Court overnight. I noticed that Julian's wife has had something less than supportive of the judicial system to say, and I wonder whether John Shipton will say something similar. We will know that in around about 30 minutes from now when John Shipton, Julian Assange's father, joins me on the program. You've got to write out everything, you see, sometimes. So that is the plan. Thank you so much for joining us. There's plenty ahead. You're with the Global News Talk Network, TNT.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, we often talk about how much progressive left-leaning governments love to embrace minority groups. It's in their DNA. They want to not only embrace minority groups, they want to put them on top of the list of their priorities. And you know how it goes. They bend over backwards to not only accommodate minority groups, beyond what's fair to the rest of the population. Think about what they're doing in the United States about transgender students over the rest of the students in the class population. But often they exempt these minority groups from having to follow sometimes common laws of the land in what is really just a virtue signaling exercise. And we know it's been going on for too long. You take the people of Alice Springs, for instance, the law-abiding white and black communities who've lived there for quite some time, who are now witnessing another round of riots, the worst of which struck about this time yesterday, perpetrated by disrespectful, violent thugs within the Indigenous community there. Now, before you all go, he can't say that, he can say that because it's the truth. And if it's the truth, you've got to say it. Indigenous-based violence. Shortly, I'll explain to you why we've had another gross and very violent riot in the town of Alice Springs. But first, here's a sample of what happened outside the Todd Tavern, which is the local pub, one of the local pubs, and also in the settlement of Hidden Valley yesterday.
Mate, they're taking 20-metre jumps and jumping in the glass trying to smash it.
Oh, she's got a brick.
Oh, fuck him, man. It's escalated big time. They've smashed through one door already.
Now, there are a number of amateur videos. There are also a number of eyewitness accounts. So what we can tell you is that hundreds of Indigenous people were involved in this riotous behaviour that left buildings and cars damaged and forced everyone in the precinct to barricade themselves inside their businesses. Local media and city councillors have spoken today on various radio media about never seeing such mindless violence and needless damage to property in all their years living in the Alice. There were reports at one stage that 200 people walked across the Todd River Bridge yesterday with weapons and came directly towards the CBD. You picture that for a second. This is an Australian city in 2024. Locals who spoke to the ABC today said it's been a harrowing 24 hours. Which could have been worse if some of the businesses in the town had not successfully barricaded their doors and windows. They were able to move fast, but there were others, after throwing rocks, who obviously wanted to get inside and do further damage. Whether that damage was to the people themselves, who knows? Now, bear in mind, two lives have been lost in Alice Springs in just the last fortnight due to drunken behaviour on the streets. Federal Senator and a local resident of Alice, Jacinta Nampajimpa Price, has called on the Northern Territory government to bring in reinforcements immediately.
I would like to see our authorities, the Territory government, do whatever it takes, whether they need to bring in a riot squad, but there needs to be calm, there needs to be peace, and we can't see it get any worse than it already is.
Commissioner, the riot squad, are you talking about police on the streets at night? I mean, ADF? I mean, what do you think, how would that work?
Well, I think it's up to the NT government to determine what it is that is needed, whether it is what riot squad, whether it is the ADF, but drastic measures need to be taken. We see it envisioned in countries across the world, and the riot squads are brought in to quell the situation. So that's what needs to happen.
So how did it get to this? How did it get to this? If you look at what's happened yesterday, there were some reports saying this was a fight between a group within the Indigenous community and another family. There are no reports about whether the other family were within the Indigenous community or part of the white population. But given that, what right does anyone have in a town, no matter what colour they are, no matter how dispossessed or poverty-stricken they are, what right do they have to run riot and become so violent towards other people's property? What right? They have none. They have none. Well, despite the growing incidences of violent behaviour, primarily inflamed by alcohol, I should mention, police have been unable to quell the violence. None of the videos that I saw captured a single police uniform in them. Not one. I may have missed some, but I saw five. This is because of a resourcing and staffing crisis that has been at the centre of controversy in the Northern Territory for some time. The Northern Territory Police Force are basically understaffed. There's not enough money to pay them. There's not enough money to entice others to join. And so, therefore, millions of dollars are being spent by the Northern Territory government on security guards. Security guards and what they call transit safety officers. Sounds like someone who sits on a tram. It's called two-tiered policing. And if you look at the footage taken from yesterday's violence, not one of the tiers turned up in time to stop the damage or arrest the culprits. We've heard nothing about arrests, nothing. It's almost as if the security guards and the police stayed put right where they were. And worse still, there's been this unwritten attitude in the Northern Territory in recent decades to leave the policing and punishment of Indigenous young people to community elders. So in other words, make young Indigenous brats and vandals not accountable to the law, almost make them non-Australians. Any form of theory behind that is flawed, I'm sorry. So what the Labor government has to realise is that a softly approach to the Indigenous-based civil disobedience has not worked, it is not working, and it will not work into the future. As the police union stated recently, when a member of the community is confronted by a violent offender, that warrants capsicum spray being deployed. They expect a police officer who has the experience and training to respond, not bus stop security. Either adequately resource police or cut crime. It is that simple. They've been talking about this for months and months. The solutions to the district's age-old crime, looting, damage to property and assault problem, it is not that simple. It is not that simple. But the truth is, and hardly anyone will admit this when they do commentary on what's occurring in Alice, but the days of police having to tippy-toe through the sensitive cultural concerns of the Australian Indigenous community has to stop, or people will die. We've seen two people die already from drunken violence in Alice Springs. More will die. Innocent people will die if this is allowed to continue and fester. And if you're not turning up to an event like the events we saw in the streets of Alice Springs yesterday, you're basically turning a blind eye to the law, and it's a lawless city we have in Australia in 2024. How did that happen? And so the slack rules introduced by the current Labor government in the Northern Territory is making it easier for alcohol to be purchased by known offenders as well. That's been well reported. Even so, isn't that what we look to a national government for? Where is the Prime Minister today showing leadership during a tumultuous time? This was the place that he turned up to, remember, when he was trying to egg on The Voice? He turned up for a mammoth three-hour session in Alice Springs. And now look at Alice Springs. He's the one that can stop the violence. He's the one that can order troops in, get the ADF in, and stop this once and for all. But don't hold your breath waiting for that this week. This is TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Irish government is proposing a law known as the Hate Speech Bill that threatens free speech. This law could have dire consequences for our democracy.
Next month, and then on to the next week.
This law will have uncertain effects on artistic and musical expression.
Please support us.
It could stifle the activity of public campaigning on political and civil issues, and also curtail speech relating to topics about religion, ethnicity, sex, and gender.
You could even be jailed for possessing documents, cartoons, or memes on your devices, even if you never read them or intended on sharing them. Mere possession could make you a criminal under this law. Help stop this law. Visit www.freespeechireland.ie/take action to bin the hate speech bill.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. And in around about 25 minutes from now, I will catch up with Julian Assange's father, John Shipton. He'll be live on the program talking about last night's decision in the UK High Court. Let's get to the founder and director of Verve Communications right now, a former television news correspondent and radio host, contestant in Celebrity Apprentice. She's done it all. Prue McSween, welcome back to TNT.
Thanks, Smithy. What a day, eh?
What a day. Mm-hmm. Here we were yesterday, I was broadcasting, and all of this was playing out in Alice Springs like it was some kind of 60s black movement, and we put up with it in 2024. Of all the five videos that I saw taken by amateur videographers yesterday, I did not see the single vision of a police uniform. I explained just a short time ago how there's this two-tier approach. So they've got, I don't know what it is, bus safety officers and transit officers and also security guards pretending to be police in Alice Springs. It's just ridiculous of all the places for that to occur. Law and order sounds to be non-existent. The Indigenous community, those culprits within that community know it. They're allowed to trash businesses, as we saw, and then just depart the scene like as if nothing has occurred. What's your take on how we got to this point and whether it's at all salvageable?
Well, they've been allowed to run riot. You know, there's no respect, there's no repercussions for or consequences for anything that these kids do. Let's face it. I mean, we've got this laughable situation now where the Albanese government has just announced a curfew for 14 days where no one under 18 can be out after dark. So what? Who's going to police it? They've said, oh, we've got 58 cops who are going to come in as soon as possible. I mean, it's just a joke. It's band-aid solutions. And we all know what's happened here. You know, we saw it with the intervention when Howard, in the early 2000s, did his intervention, and Mal Brough was part of it all. And they actually decided that they were going to get tough and intervene to save these children's lives.
Yeah.
And so there was a really tough period. And then, of course, Rudd gets in and waters it all down, says sorry, marries it with the closing of the gap. And, of course, everybody tiptoes around the Indigenous problem. Yeah. Many of us, including me, have got into trouble for saying what we all know is true. These children need intervention.
Yeah.
We can call it what you like, call it another stolen generation. The point is these kids are running riot. They are being betrayed by these puffed up, self-righteous do-gooders who want to talk about their rights, but condoning the fact that these kids are doing wrong, that they are in the wrong homes. They are an endangered species because their parents are either unable to cope with them and look after them. They are living in third world conditions. What we need to do, but no one will ever have the guts to do it, is to intervene and take these kids away, maybe give them some sort of, I think in fact the Nationals, Little Proud thought of this, take them somewhere in the Northern Territory, give them jobs, give them love, give them discipline, give them a reason for getting out of bed every morning, give them safety so that they're leaving their homes at night because they don't want to be abused by their parents or violently assaulted by drunken parents. So, I mean, it's going to take a brave society to do it. But we're all gutless. We've got politically driven politicians who wouldn't have the guts to do any of that. And this is where it's so tragic. Everything that is being touted is a band-aid solution. It's never going to get to the nub of the problem until someone has the balls to get in there, take these kids away, give them a job, give them education, give them health, and give them a safe haven to live in, and then they can come back into the communities and maybe become good citizens. Mm. But at this stage, we're just writing these kids off.
Yeah, this whole business about being unable to take children away from their families has this connotation of stolen generation. But hang on a second. Every day of the year in Australia, kids of different nationalities and white kids are taken away from their parents because they act up exactly the same. We can do it for white kids, but we can't touch black kids who need to be separated in some instances from their families.
It's an insane situation. We are an insane society, and we have allowed these woke morons to dictate us to us and little children. Generations of kids are being failed, and what are we doing about it?
And there's no hope for
them. Nothing.
No hope for them. If they think that you can rely on their own families and the elders within their small communities to get them through this tricky period, you're dreaming. You are dead set dreaming. They are history. And unless you intervene, they are history.
This is another Indigenous dream time, but it's a nightmare, Smithy.
Yeah, very well said. Yep, that's exactly what it is. All right. Let's move on. We'll no doubt get a chance to talk about this further. One of the nation's most powerful public servants, this is quite interesting, blindsided her two ministers by releasing key new details about these ex-detainees' criminal records after the High Court's landmark decision overturning indefinite detention. We know all about that story. But this 17-page document released this week was basically forced to be released under pretty heavy questioning from Liberal Senator James Patterson at Senate Estimates. I can't imagine James Patterson getting angry or putting the pressure on anyone. But anyway, it was revealed for the first time that of the 149 former detainees who we've spoken about ad nauseum on this program, 7 had previously been convicted of murder or attempted murder, 37 of sexual offences, and 72 of assault and violent offending, kidnapping or armed robbery. All out, free as a bird, into the Australian society. Yippee! Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill and Immigration Minister Andrew Giles hoped to keep the document from public scrutiny. How dare they? Home Affairs Secretary Stephanie Foster was the one who crumbled under this heavy questioning. She won't be getting a Christmas card from Labor, but she's done us all a favour, Prue.
Well, isn't it fascinating? This is a public servant who's actually serving the public and not her political masters.
Yeah.
And of course, she's got into deep doo-doo over it. She was hauled over the coals by Claire O'Neill, her Home Affairs boss, and apparently Giles. Well, he's done her a favour because he put her on the ice. He didn't speak to her for a week. You'd want that to happen all the time, wouldn't you, actually? But, you know, this is a woman who decided, and she's got incredible credentials and so well respected, that the public needed to know this.
Yeah.
She is accountable. But what it's telling us is that this is the reflection of the dynamics between government and public servants and bureaucrats. It's a very unhealthy situation where they put in people who they think they can control, and when they don't, can't control them. You know, we'll just see how long she's around for this world before she's, you know, given the whole heave up,
heave-ho. That's what she'll get.
Thank you. Yeah, that's
she'll
what
get
I,
the
yeah,
heave-ho. I hope someone will. In the Canberra gallery is actually looking at her career from here on in to actually tell us the day in which she's dumped, because that's
exactly
what they'll do.
Well, now what's happening, of course, O'Neill's been forced to, you know, there's going to be a parliamentary inquiry. People, in fact, it's very hard because Dutton and you know, the Libs have sort of said, we need this inquiry. We want to hold off on this bill. Now, the bill itself is something that I think most in the public would support. We want to have the powers to stop the appeals and to be able to deport these
deport
people.
Them.
But the point is, it's rushed through as everything that Labor does. There's no consequences that are considered. They just, you know, react, don't they? They haven't got any plans to really see where this is going. So they implement these things in a rush. And, of course, we all face the consequences, as we've as said. So I think it's really important that we have this inquiry. But you have to say that if it doesn't get through, then Dutton could wear some egg on his face, because we really do want to have a situation where we have this absurd appeal after appeal process.
Yeah.
And these people in the end, and part of it, of course, is that they're saying, well, if we don't deport them, we'll put them in jail. Well, how long are they going to put them in jail?
Yeah.
You know, and what's going to happen then? Do they get freed? Or do we go through the appeal process again? So there's a lot of holes in this bill, and I can understand why Dutton's done it, but we still need to make sure we get something through that is going to stop this ridiculous process.
Yeah, it's a dog's breakfast completely. I've got to get to a news update. We'll come back in just a short moment with Prue McSween on TNT.
Oh, yeah?
We interrupt the regular programming to bring you some breaking news.
Breaking news. Newsflash.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Six people are presumed dead following the bridge collapse in Baltimore, with authorities confirming they will start searching for their bodies on Wednesday morning. The US has 3 weeks to prove to London's High Court that Julian Assange will be spared the death penalty and will be protected by the First Amendment if he is extradited on espionage charges. And Australia looks set to become the first country in the world to launch a formal investigation into the alarming rise in excess deaths.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We'll get to John Shipton, Julian Assange's father, who's in Melbourne at the moment. We'll get to him in just a short moment. Now, just still on that same subject about detainees and this legislation they are trying to formulate, it is quite weird when we have the Greens forming an alliance with the Coalition, but they have. We can reveal that the Greens are moving in the Senate for an inquiry into the government's legislation that could lead to the imprisonment of people who refuse to cooperate with efforts to deport them due to fears of persecution in their birth country. During a press conference today, Coalition spokesman for Home Affairs James Patterson and spokesman for Immigration Dan Tehan indicated they would be supporting the Greens. There's got to be a big stick somewhere. I understand all of this. It is a dog's breakfast, as I say, but gee, it's a strange day when the Greens and the Coalition formulate some kind of alliance against Labor.
weird bedfellows. I mean, it's just, but this just tells you, doesn't it? You know, they'll get into bed with anyone if it's going to serve their political purposes. And we all know that both parties can't stand each other. And you have these bleeding heart Greens. I mean, they'd just open the borders. They'd do a Biden. Just come on down, folks. Australia will fix it. You know, we just pay you whatever you want. Come in. We'll find you a bed somewhere. I mean, it's just absurd. But of course, they want these bleeding hearts to actually stay, and they'd like the people snuff mugglers to keep dropping them off in the Northern Territory. So this is where I said I think that Dutton's going to have to be careful. It is a weird alliance, and we've got to make sure that there are changes, that the bill gets through in some form. But, you know, they all have different reasons. Dutton wants to make sure the unintended consequences aren't there and that it goes far enough, whereas the Greens just want it to be a lay-down misere. Come on in, honey bunnies. It's more voters for us.
Just while we're on the Greens, this is interesting. I don't know whether I've missed something today or missed something this afternoon, but Craig Kelly has been tweeting or posting on X about the Greens leader Adam Bandt spending thousands of dollars on private jet flights while lecturing, of course, Australians about climate change. Craig Kelly says the Greens must explain why they hired a private jet, billed to the taxpayer, of course, to fly from Canberra to Brisbane, where there is no shortage of commercial flights on that route. Was it because business class was full and the Greens can't have their leader travelling with the plebs at the back of the plane? I'm sure the ABC will do a thorough investigation.
Oh, yeah, right.
Not.
I mean, look, they're all the same, aren't they? They're the biggest bunch of hypocrites. We know that the Greens are they have no credibility. They're a joke, Smithy. And, you know, I just think that anybody who's on the gravy train, if you can cop on a private jet, of course you're going to do that. And frankly, an EV, God, take you months to get it charged up to get to Brisbane, wouldn't it?
Exactly. I made the point yesterday to Mark Latham. I said, you know, if I run out of petrol, say I'm on a 2-hour journey between two cities in the bush, and I run out of petrol in the middle of these cities, I know what to do. I hitch a ride back to the nearest town an hour away. I find a jerry can. I get petrol. I get another lift and I get to the car. I fill it up and I drive. What if I have an EV and the same thing happens in the middle of these two towns? Where do I go then?
Well, you don't. You know, you get.
Where do you
you're
go?
There. I mean, this is the thing. They don't understand that moron Bowen doesn't understand. It's not just the cost of these bloody EVs. It's the fact that it's not convenient. No. We haven't got the infrastructure. No. You know, and who has the time to spend waiting, if you can get onto one of those recharging things, 20 minutes? You can be in and out of the petrol station in 5 minutes. Yep. You know, it's just all bull. And, you know, we're not going to fall for it.
I want to talk about the NDIS. I spoke about it at length yesterday, but I want to talk about a couple of aspects. We're now hearing today details of what the government wants to change about the NDIS. They want to have no more automatic top-ups, so therefore participants will get a budget. Now, most people who probably read that said, you mean they don't get a budget now? And there'll be an exact definition, would you believe, Prue, for what services are allowed to be claimed as opposed to the holidays and utility bills that were claimed. Most people reading that today would say, don't they have a definition for what can be claimed now? Like, seriously, no wonder this was a rort and a half.
But, Smithy, this is the issue with everything that Labor does. Nothing is ever planned or, you know, somebody has a thought bubble and says, let's do this.
It's not accountable, is it?
No accountability, no business modelling. They don't understand business. They've never run a bloody business. They wouldn't have a clue. We have this situation now, and Senator Holly Hughes has just said that, you know, there's a dark, sinister part to these changes, that what they're going to try and do is get out the small business operators, the carers that come on, because they want to force them into the bigger ones that are run by unions or will have union members. There's always politics influencing every move the Labor Party makes. Yeah. And this is just another one. I mean, we do need changes. They're hitting up the states. The idea originally in the National Cabinet was that the states would be compensated with more GST. Well, look at New South Wales. Mm. We're way down the toilet. So how can we possibly afford our health system and bumping up, sharing the protocols and the costs of the NDIS? We just can't do it. The whole idea of the NDIS is a lovely one, but who's going to pay for it? It's projected to cost us $100 billion soon. I mean, give us a break. Where's that money coming from?
Taxes. All right. The Master Builders today released a report calling on governments to find or recruit, and this astounded me when I saw it, 90,000 tradies they need in 90 days. 90,000 in 90 days. That's how chronic the situation is. Now, if the government knew how to control and handle the immigration policy and actually did it with a degree of accountability, planning, strategy, due diligence, instead of just a willy-nilly open the door, they might have solved that problem already.
But again, another rush job, Smithy. You know, they don't stop and think about infrastructure. They don't understand that we don't even have the materials here, let alone the workers. And we're watching all these big developers going broke. It's because they just cannot build. There aren't the people here to do it, the tradies here to do it. They haven't got the patience or the dollars to sit through the green and red tape now that we have. And there's no land for them to do it, you know, so that we've got this whole ridiculous situation. It's like a complex nightmare. And we're at the stage now where people are going to be, there'll be more and more tent cities. People are not able to find a place to live in. We're letting more and more people come in here. And this government is culpable. And I just, if I was somebody couch surfing or in a tent, I would go and park myself either outside Parliament House, although, oh, okay, well, you've got the Aboriginal Embassy there, of course, too.
Yeah, strange still
bedfellows. But I'll go to Albanese's electoral office if he ever goes there, or maybe outside the lodge, and just remind them on a daily basis how many Australians now, how many working Australians cannot afford to even pay their rent or a mortgage or find a house.
There was a story in Domain today, and I implore people to look it up. I don't have it in front of me, but from memory, the story was about the many, many suburbs in Sydney. Burwood is one of them, where the majority of homes that were sold in December were sold for less than what the same properties were bought for, which tells me that people were forced to sell, that run out of savings, and they couldn't pay the mortgage.
It's so sad. And you can't believe that this is Australia. You know, we call ourselves a lucky country. Well, we all believe that our kids would grow up with a backyard. You know, that's all fanciful now. Yeah, we are so way behind. It's a really distressing time for us all.
Just quickly, you are in the middle of writing a piece about trust. And I was just saying at the beginning of the program, we lost trust in the government about 25 years ago and anyone associated with government. We've lost trust since, I think, COVID in our institutions, especially our health officials. And I don't know what's left, Prue. Who do we trust? And the fact that we don't trust those that lead us has got to be an appalling situation, doesn't it?
Well, it is, Smithy. And the thing is, it's scientists, because you can't, you know, look at the CSIRO. Look at the fact checkers at the ABC. Institutions are now questionable. We certainly don't trust government. Look at what's happening around the world. You know, we've got this situation where the Dutch Freedom Party's come in. Look closer to home. Look at the independents, the number of independents who have got up in the last election in Tasmania, for example, 13% or more of the vote. People do not trust our politicians anymore or government because they're so disconnected from us. They lie to us, and we just have lost heart and faith in them. So, you know, the smaller parties and independents are not bound by factionalism or union masters. So everything, there's not the bias there that government, the major parties have. And of course, many in the major parties have never worked before. They've come through the ranks of politics or straight out of uni into these political jobs, and they have no real understanding of what people are going through.
No.
And of course, they're cocooned from the hardships that we're all facing now, whether it be small business or in your home business, which everybody is saying is failing them. You know, we know that the politicians live a life that's privileged. They don't suffer like we all do. So the Trust Barometer, which was put out by Edelman's, it was a 32,000 sample around the world. And it's just saying that there's such a huge disconnect between government, particularly our Canberra politicians here and Macquarie Street. They have no idea what people are going through. And when you look at what happened with Albanese and The Voice and the resounding no vote, he was totally delusional, disconnected. What we need to see is, do we need more referenda? Is this the only way they're going to listen to our voices? Because we have talkback radio, but letters to the editor. But what really happens? They just go on in their brazen way, no apologies. They do what they want to do and what their masters tell them to do. So it's no wonder trust is so low.
Yeah, sad reality. It certainly is. Prue McSween, fabulous again. Thank you very much for your insight and your analysis. All the very best for the week.
You too, Smithy. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Good on you. Thank you, Prue McSween from Verve Communications. I can take your calls on any of what we've raised already, but John Shipton, Julian Assange's father, will be on the program right after this break on TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel, ordered a coffee. But while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
We are for pets. We do anything for them because they do everything for us. We are for people, for those who love pets unconditionally. We are for good, from adoptions and veterinary care to disaster relief and fighting pet hunger. We stand together to create a better world for pets and families in need. We are PetSmart Charities, for pets, for people, for good.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
You're with Chris Smith
on today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
Well, a UK court has ruled that Julian Assange should have the chance to appeal an order to extradite him to the United States. Now, the High Court in London ruled on Tuesday that the WikiLeaks founder must have the right to challenge the British government's June 2022 extradition order unless the United States provides within 3 weeks assurances that he would receive a fair trial and would not face the death penalty, as if they're going to say anything. But at the same time, the court rejected Assange's bid for an appeal based on the claim that the case against him is politically motivated. Now, the ruling suggests that the legal wrangling, which has been going on for more than a decade now, it'll continue. You can bet on that. Julian was not present in court to hear the ruling. He still remains in London's Belmarsh prison. It's far from a clean-cut ruling, but let's find out what Team Assange construes from all of this. John Shipton is Julian's father, a retired builder. He now spends his time campaigning around the world seeking the release of his son, as any of us would do. John Shipton, welcome to TNT.
Thanks, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
How can we best legally interpret this latest High Court decision? In some ways, it's disappointing. In some ways, it leaves us hanging. And in other ways, it gives the United States a clean run, doesn't it?
Yeah, sort of. You know, to start off, all the principal important aspects of public knowledge and our rights and also the political matters, for example, not to extradite for political reasons, Article 4 of the treaty between the UK and the United States, all of them left out. They put in these three things. One is the nationality, for example, he shouldn't be unfavorably treated because he's an Australian, meaning that he ought to have access to the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of speech and freedom of publication. It's not possible for that assurance to be made. You will see, for example, in Guantanamo Bay, if they made that Julian a beneficiary of the United States Bill of Rights, equally they'd have to make the Guantanamo people have access to the benefits of the Bill of Rights. So you can see that it's a sort of a falsity, a legal falsity, which keeps Julian in a constant limbo now. Yeah. 15 years, you know. If I could say that the Prime Minister showed considerable courage, saying that implying that he was involved in the legal stratagems, also in the court case, there were two High Commission representatives there. Also, Andrew Wilkie was in the court, and myself, Gabrielle, and the United Nations Rapporteur on Human Rights, two MEPs from the European Parliament and an MP from the English Parliament. So a lot of weight on the court to make a reasonable decision. I mean, I have to admire the skill of the English judges to make this determination, which is a bit like a sort of an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
An enigma wrapped in a riddle. Stella doesn't see it that way, though, John. Stella writes, the courts recognise that Julian is exposed to a flagrant denial of his freedom of expression rights, that he is being discriminated against on the basis of his nationality as an Australian, and that he remains exposed to the death penalty. And yet what the courts have done has been to invite a political intervention from the United States to send a letter saying it's all okay.
Yeah, Chris, I agree with that, your perspective, that it's not possible for the prosecutor to guarantee or give assurances as to the decisions of a judge in the United States when Julian goes for a hearing. As for the guarantee on the death penalty, they equally can write a letter assuring that the prosecutor won't pursue a death penalty, but that doesn't mean to say that the judge is so constrained.
Yeah. So it's ultimate limbo again. It must be terribly frustrating, because weren't you expecting a decision either way?
Well, no, I you know, I we have pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. So my evaluation was, Chris, that it'd be more of the same, but the will has to be kept alive and you have to keep fighting. So I think there is some advantage here. Previously, the demeanour of all the court cases that I've attended with Julian Assange, the demeanour of the court has been less than sympathetic and a denial of, you know, basic human rights and due process. In this case, the two judges were well-mannered and the court was well-ordered and access was given to the family and, of course, to the High Commission and so on. So that's a change. Mm-hmm. And I think that that change has been brought about by the actions of the Australian People, Parliament and the executive led by the Prime Minister. That's important.
A small but important change. That sounds exactly what it is. The Biden administration just needs to drop all charges or do a deal on a lesser charge. Would Julian accept and plead guilty to a lesser charge, do you think?
Oh, I have no idea on that. You know, my job is to accumulate in the best way possible, in my own modest fashion, the support of the Australian public into a political movement which causes the government to address the matter in a proper and decent manner, which they have done. The negotiations, comment on that, Andrew Wilkie on the ABC this morning said that they made a firm statement that this matter, the negotiations, must be fulfilled in the immediate future. So I take it that Andrew is expressing the will of the Australian public, the will of the parliamentary Assange support group, and invigorating the Prime Minister to bring the negotiations to a conclusion in whatever way is necessary to do so.
Do you think now that today or yesterday is done with, do you think that is more likely to happen?
It must happen because, you know, as our conversation has illuminated, clearly illuminated, pristinely illuminated, political matters are always settled through negotiation, always. The sides come together, they have a chat, work out their position, make their adjustments, and a settlement's made. In the case of Assange, the Australian People, Parliament, Executive insist that the rights of an Australian citizen and his human rights and due process be applied to Julian Assange. It's pretty magnificent, actually.
How do you think Julian would have taken the decision?
Well, I spoke to him on the phone about midnight last night. I mean, he wasn't so happy, but he said, well, I'm right. He reverses what I say. He says pessimism of the will and optimism of the intellect. So, you know, sitting in the jail cell counting up what's on his side and what's on the other people's side, he decides that intellectually there's room for success. But his will says to him, well, I've been here now, I think this is the 28th court case and we've yet to win.
How do you think he's mentally holding up?
Whenever the fight's on in its fullness, you know, his strength rises, you know, yeah. But I imagine, you know, today and for the next week, he'll be feeling the body blow of another, looks like another year in you know, been, it looks like another year at least, in Belmarsh Maximum Prison as the two sides fight it out, come to a settlement. About dropping the charges, in the Wall Street Journal, there was a bit last week. It did say that Obama, well, I'm characterizing it. It said Obama's a saint. He didn't pursue it. Hillary Clinton is a miffed and hurt old lady who's in retirement. And the charges are one of another one of Trump's monumental blunders. So they can be immediately dropped, no problem. I take that as an understanding that it's possible for a political position for the current administration to be taken and say, well, it's another of Mr. Trump's blunders, so we can get rid of it and send him back to Australia.
That's the positivity of the will as well, I think. John Shipton, thank you very much for your time, and all the very best for you, the family, and Julian.
Thanks, Chris. Been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. The father of Julian Assange, John Shipton. Put yourself in those shoes after 15 long years. No, thank you. We'll be back after the news on TNT.